Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D. and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rail. Hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay. And
hello?
Yes, in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, I talk with who I see as the bravest person in Alabama, and that is Dana Jill Simpson. Dana Jill Simpson was a longtime Republican operative whose sworn affidavit alleges that Sigmund was tried and convicted as part of a conspiracy to keep him from running for political office in the future. Good morning, Dana. How's it going?
Good morning, Marcus. How are you doing this morning? Thank you for having us on. I don't know that I'm the bravest citizen in Alabama. I just stand up for what I think's right for the future of Alabama, but thank you.
Yeah, we feel that you're the bravest woman who stood up, and I know you're a very humble person, and we're glad that you stood up and helped you know, shed some light onto what was really going on and what a tragedy that it has been since then, because it seems like the Alabama politics, both Democrat and Republican, have really gone to the dogs since then. And you're coming out, one person would think that it would help it get better, but it just really just exposed it, and it's like they just came on out with all their dirt. And I'm talking about both sides, because we also have a mess on the Democratic side. Now, when you came out and you exposed some of these truths to the people, I know you did it at great, you know, risk to your personal safety and professional career, and to us on the grassroots level, that takes a lot of guts, and a person has to really believe in what they're doing to risk it all. So you are a very brave person, and I admire you, and I follow you. So tell us what's been going on since that case. I know you haven't given many interviews in the past, because like I had someone tell me the other night that these are some very sick and dangerous, scary people. So what's been happening since all these revelations came forth?
Well, I've continued doing grassroots work, obviously. I was probably one of the first people in the country to come out and speak about the weaponization of the Justice Department against people. And we've seen a lot more of that. And I've worked with the media all over the United States. Done a lot of work with people in New York, done a lot of work with people in Washington, D.C., with the National Press Club, trying to help people realize that the Department of Justice is really the Department of Injustice these days. I do a lot of justice work. I've been attacked, as a lot of people know who have watched the Siegelman film, by the Sessions, Pryor, Riley, and Canary Bunch, but I have continued to stand up for justice, and the march and struggle continues.
Yes, and with someone like Jeff Sessions, when all this stuff unfolded in Charlottesville, I'm like, what could be the chances that we could end up with someone like Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General when something like this happens? I have no faith in the United States Justice Department, and it's not just because Sessions is over it. I didn't have any faith of it under Obama and Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, because they could have done something, but they know what happened here in Alabama is so terrible that they cannot reveal it, because it would expose just how the Justice Department can be weaponized.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something about that. So, you know, I don't think that party really matters. Like, anymore, as to saying this is the good guys and this is the bad guys. The reality is this, is the Department of Justice has been weaponized. And by that, I think to define that, what I mean is it is used as a political tool by whoever gets in there for their own personal purposes. It's no longer used to protect a citizens. So, for example, you know, Sessions is in there now, and he is, of course, targeting the resistance right now. I mean, there's just been that new article that came out this week about the fact that he's asked for 1 million IDs on the Disruptus, .com website, and, of course, they're fighting him. But he's done that as a political tool to attack the left. Holder, interestingly enough to note, most people think he's a crad. He's not. He started out as a Republican, basically. I mean, if you look at all of his appointments, and he had a lot of appointments along the way working with Republicans first. You know, there's an old story that goes that years ago, Karl Rove, when he was a young man, was real good friends with Holder, and that they helped to remove Richard Nixon so that other Republicans could take over, and back in the 70s. So it's not surprising to me, when you watch the Siegelman film, that Holder goes on, which is part of my research, I might add, to end up at Covington and Berlin, the firm that represents Karl Rove. So yeah. I tell people all the time, you know, when you say, who are these people? You don't get those jobs at DOJ unless you've scratched other people's backs. Those jobs are not easy jobs to get. Most people, most Americans can't get those jobs. And the fact of the matter is the people who have gotten those jobs, they owe duties to political folks. And that is wrong. We gotta get rid of the political folks at the DOJ, and we have got to get career folks in who have no political obligation whatsoever to either party.
That's correct. That's correct. They're all said they get corrupted. They get corrupted. And we need to push off. I protested Eric Holder when he came to Alabama A&M University. I was still a staff member. I wasn't on duty, but I was out there protesting in the rain, and people that worked there was coming out. They were saying, like, you're going to get in trouble out there. You're making the university look bad. I said, this makes the university look good. But I couldn't believe that people actually thought having a free, nonviolent protest with signs standing in the rain, how that makes the university look bad. And that type of thinking we just got to get rid of. And I have to tell people, I have to tell my own African-American people in my African-American community that I don't have to support Obama because he's black. I don't have to support Eric Holder because he's black or Loretta Lynch. I tell people I think they all three were great according to what they have accomplished in their lives. But as for me, I cannot consider them – you know, as the great. They did some great things, but I cannot consider them as great because of what happened in the Don Sigmund case. I just can't do it because that is my litmus test. If people can have a litmus test on gays and abortion and everything else, I can have a litmus test on the Justice Department. And my litmus test tells me that Obama, Holder, and Lynch, they're not at the top of my, you know, at the best. You know, they were good, and I appreciate their service, but I'm not going to give them that status because my litmus test is what happened in the Don Sigmund case, and they failed.
Well, that's right. It's exactly right. And Eric Holder is the person who I hold to be responsible. And I'm going to tell you why. Basically, what happened from what we understand now and what we started finding out then was in November of 2008, before Obama went in, but during the time of his transitions team, I got contacted by a female lawyer in Conyers' office who told me that we needed to get the paperwork out of the DOJ on the Laura Canary deal of not recusing because it was going to probably be destroyed. And I'm like, oh, no, you know, we trust the transition team. They're not going to destroy this for President Obama. And she said, you don't understand. Eric Holder wants to be DOJ chief, and he is going to have to cut a deal with Jeff Sessions to be DOJ chief. And I'm like, say what? And he said he's going to have to cut a deal.
That sounds like
And I'm like, what kind of deal is he going to cut? And she said, well, here's the deal. Jeff Sessions controls basically whether those Republicans will consent to him being DOJ chief. So she said, he's going to be helping him. And by golly, he did. You know, that transition team got those records, took them to the White House, but in the month of February of 2009, what we learned and was hearing, we were like, okay, Obama's going to, you know, do something for Don now. They've got those records. They know. And then we hear, oh, no, that's not what's going to happen because Eric Holder has those records, And his firm represents Carl Rove, Covington and Berlin. And they are not going to let y'all get Don Siegelman out because Eric Holder won't be DOJ chief if he does that because Jeff Sessions won't approve him.
Yeah. This,
We were beside ourselves.
Don't know. Yeah, a lot of people should know these things. You know, they blindly follow these people. They blindly praise these people and don't do any of their homework, just like they did not do their homework with Doug Jones. Now, he might be the best thing chance the Democrats got, but he does deserve a close look at his record. I don't know what it is about Democrats who do not want to really, once they get behind somebody, they really don't want to dig into them. Now, you can still support them, but dang, at least know everything it is about them. I don't know why they're afraid just to look into it.
Well, that's interesting that you'd bring that up because here's the deal, so you understand on that. Basically, Holder had to let Carl Rove off the hook from testifying in order to get Jeff Sessions to approve him to be DOJ chief for the Obama administration, and he did it. But shortly there afterwards, they invited Doug Jones to Washington, D.C., gave him an award for the work he did for the black community in Alabama and for all citizens in Alabama for protecting civil rights. But when they invited him up to D.C., I contacted some of Siegelman's people and said, hey, I've heard that Doug Jones is going to win the award, and I know that Sessions and them are pushing on Holder because I've heard from this woman lawyer in Conyers' office, and I said, I'm just going to tell y'all so you know, we need to get him to talk to Eric Holder to let Don Siegelman go. I get a call back a couple of days later from one of the Siegelman folks that says that Doug Jones says that we're not going to ruin his big award day on him going up there to talk to Eric Holder and that we're not going to have any chance that Eric Holder and them's going to let him go to give it up.
So he did it
and
all.
So I will never support Doug Jones as because he could have gone, I mean, why would he accept an award from a guy who cut a deal with Jeff Sessions? He knew it.
Yeah,
I would have. If I'd have been
talking. Doug Jones is looking out for his own self. He's not really worried about Siegelman or anyone else in the Democratic Party. He doesn't mind deals being cut, backroom agreements, just as long as he advances his own personal goals.
Well, I will say this, so you know, and this is what really got me. And I think I have sent you this article recently, but you know, in the fall of that year of 2009, we're still fighting all of the grassroots in Alabama who are really true blue Democrats. And by this point, I had switched from the Republican Party and was helping progressive Democrats, because I had been so brutally attacked by a lot of the Republicans. And so we are in Alabama, and we are fighting really hard, and we're at a critical juncture of trying to get Obama once again to let Siegelman go. And Doug goes and gets in the village newspaper, of their Village Voice, and downgrades Richard Scrushy, who was his client, his very own client, co-defendant, saying that nobody should really believe in Richard Scrushy, you know. And so basically he hurt his very own former client by saying this. So, no, I'm not a Doug Jones fan. As everybody knows, I really pushed for Hansen, the progressive. And I think until Alabama Democrats really wake up and start pushing for progressive candidates, we're not going to win.
No, we're not. And And I go back to I had an interview with the governor yesterday, as you know. I was going to ask a question, but we had a caller call in, and she asked a perfect grassroots question. She asked the $65,000 grassroots question, and that was, what is it going to take to revive the Alabama Democratic Party with what we're working with? And he said, we have got to change structure of the Alabama Democratic Party on how people are elected within the party, because right now it's that black political caucus that's keeping Joe Reed in power. This needs to change. We need to have a more fair in-party elections so we could, you know, wipe out this old leadership who think they have a permanent place in the party just because they marched in the 60s. Their time has gone. They served well, but they're not the people we need for today. We are running away millennials. Millennials do not want to come into no organization and see a bunch of old heads sit around and regurgitate the march of the 60s. That is not attractive to millennials. They need to be in the game, with skin in the game, with all their technology and innovation and making this party move. But we got these old heads, especially the Alabama, the ADC. They're keeping Joe Reed in power for their own selfish reason, and they're just a bunch of people who feel entitled to a lifelong position because they marched in the 60s. That's ridiculous.
Well, now, I'm going to tell you, I value each and every one of those older people. I think they have an excellent wealth of information. What I'm critical about is their unwillingness to share it with the young people in Alabama, the millennials that have a zest, that go down to their meetings, try to get on a committee or try to get involved, and they blow them off and they never go back.
Yeah.
And repeatedly traveling across the state, talking to people, because I've talked to a lot of people doing activist work. As a lot of people know, I was so brutally attacked by the other side that I don't do a lot of stuff publicly, but privately I deal with a lot of activists. And what we hear repeatedly is these activists contact Reed and Nancy Worley, and it's like, well, come to this meeting. And then when they get there, they realize there's no place at the table for them.
Exactly.
And I think the thing is this, is we must create more places at the table for more diverse voices. And I'm going to tell you, I understand the Black Caucus folks in Alabama who are like, oh, we can't just have people come in and take over and throw us out, because then we'll be fighting for our voice again. But I think inclusion should be the word instead of exclusion of anybody. And I think the way to be inclusive is to do Don's plan and let communities vote and send people. Maybe also have some extra seats at the table for diverse groups that might not get elected in Alabama if there was a countywide election. You know, I mean, we could have, you know, several seats devoted to the LGBTQ community because they might not get elected at a seat, or to, you know, the Native Americans, you know, I mean, or to the Hispanic community. There's just no, we could have some extra seats in addition to elected seats. But for the most part, we have a bunch of people who have, to some extent, developed a privilege because they've been on this so long that they're not inclusive. And so there's got to be a redesigning of the system. And but to make sure every one of our groups that are in communities and beloved people of the community are included, and that all voices, including those that are the softest, are heard.
Yes, and people can speak up, and they need to open up and let people speak up. There's a fear of speaking up. Now, there was a gentleman from the Limestone County, Alabama, part that was down there, and they spoke up to voice some concerns. Would you believe Nick Worley was about to call the police on them? Just for voicing
their
concerns.
Yes, I know.
It's back and forth, but he was not threatening her life. He was not cursing her out. He was just forcefully disagreeing, and there's zero tolerance in this current Alabama Democratic Party for dissent. And that's another problem I have with Democrats. Democrats, they act like Republicans in some ways in that it's got to be all or nothing. There's some Democrats who don't believe in abortion, but they're staunch Democrats. There's some that don't believe in some of the agendas, but they love Democrats. But a person like that who is not 100% on board with the platform, you're going nowhere in leadership, absolutely nowhere. And tell me what you think about this last ballot that we got that was so empty. What do you think was the cause of that? It was the worst ballot I had seen in my life. I'm 47 years old, voted every year since I was 18. That was the weakest, blankest ballot I've ever seen in my life. What happened?
They're not recruiting people. I mean, there are some thoughts in this state, and you know, because there's no funding, there's no way to investigate it, but there's some thoughts that this leadership that we currently have in, you know, is kept in because of the fact that they are friendly with the Canary Bunch. And so why go recruit any candidates? I don't know if that's the truth or not. I've not investigated it, but I will say this. What I have done is ask around the state to people, why is nobody running who's a Democrat? Because that was kind of one of these things that amazed me. And when I switched, and basically what I got is, well, there's no support from the state folks. So that being the case, until we change the privilege and entitlement issues with the state Democratic Party heads, we're not going to have a list of candidates. I will add this, too, so you know. One of the most shocking things in this last Senate race that I saw is that they came out and immediately picked their guy. Doug Jones is who we're supporting. You know, they did, and I mean, basically, on the Democratic Party in the state of Alabama, Nancy Worley and Mr. Reed basically picked who it was going to be. They didn't ask the state party, all the county chairs or anything like that. They didn't care. They picked who it was going to be. We had 10 good, I think it was 10, and you may know the exact number. It was 8, 9, 10, something like that. People running. We saw tons of forums all over the state for Republicans to speak, but where were the Democrats at?
I'll tell you what happened, and I have been saying this for at least, I've been saying this ever since 2013 about the Democratic Party needs to have a revival. Then all of a sudden, just a few months ago, well, it was right before the summer started, Nancy Worley comes out and says that 2017 is the Democratic summer revival. I didn't hear a peep. Not one tent was pitched. Not one person waded in the Democratic waters. Nothing. They're just blowing smoke. That's why I feel the same way that they are connected to the other side, you know, because everything they do seems to help the other side and not Democrats. And the way they were silent on the Siegelman issue, I mean, that should have been a rallying cry to motivate Democrats, and they didn't even try to do that. That's what I mean by, and you're right. Joe Reed and some of the others have done some really great things in their past during during the 60s. But what's happening now is their past successes have now been overshadowed by their current failures, and they're just digging themselves deeper and deeper. And that's another problem we got. People don't know when to get out. You know, you got to know when your time has served and went on to pass on the torch. No one should be wanting to hold on to power if you see that you're not effective anymore. To do that is only signs of a narcissist, in my opinion. That's just my personal opinion. Because the facts don't lie. The numbers don't lie.
Gotta say, I agree to some extent with you, and I think the activism you have done has just been incredible and awesome on the fact that we need to shake up the Democratic Party in Alabama. I'm going to tell you, due to the fact that I was a grassroots activist on the Siegelman stuff and came forward, told my story, was a whistleblower, having been a Republican lawyer all these years and getting disgusted with the way they were using the DOJ. I hear from tons of people that want to run for office. The problem is they don't get any support from the state office. I mean, I got an email this past week from one guy who's running for governor. I've gotten several that are running, wanting to run for governor as pro-marijuana, pro-casinos, pro-progress of moving our state forward, and pro of sending all our kids to college for free with, you know, this money that we're just losing because we have these under current markets that are not being taxed, and they're wanting to bring them to the forefront, legalize them and tax them for our kids to go to college. And they, I get this ad that says, you know, I'm running, and regardless of whatever they do down at the state leadership, I'm gonna take this campaign all the way to the governor's office or whatever. The thing is this, in order to win campaigns, and I hate to tell everybody this, but this is the real truth. And, I mean, I've had some great mentors in my lifetime on winning elections. And the one thing I know, in order to win an election, you got to be out there organizing every day, every week, every month, and you've got to be getting people, and it don't take one or two or ten that's meeting down there in Montgomery with Nancy or Joe. It takes hundreds of people on the ground daily pushing candidates, and these people are not capable of doing that, and they need to step aside. My belief is the reason they won't step aside, because I've checked into that. My belief is they like the perks of getting to go to the national conventions. They like the power.
Yeah,
they just don't want to do the work.
Yeah, and they built all this for a national convention and a convention in Montgomery, where they're going to listen to the same people repeat the same things over and over. We have got to inject this party with some of that enthusiasm with the millennials. And like we just discussed, millennials are not going to get involved unless they can be hands-on. And we should want them to be hands-on.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to be straight up with you. I did the 2016 election. I did Oppo, as you know, with Bernie Sanders' bunch. But I'm going to be straight up with you on this. I thought I knew how to do research and was really good, but I'm going to tell you something. These millennials, they will bring so much to the table. They're going to take us into the 21st century of politics with just their technical skills. They're so far ahead of us.
Yes.
Working with a group of young OPPO researchers that were Democrats, I can tell you they are worlds ahead of us. And we need to turn over the reins to these young people. I'm really excited.
I say it all the time. People think that I'm doing a lot and stuff, and I say, man, if I had me three or four millennials that was on my team, it'd be a wrap. We would fix this thing in a very short period of time. But we, like you said, they have got to play a bigger role. And one thing also, too, money has to trickle down to the very grassroots in the communities. You got somebody in every community who is a political junkie. that person needs money to walk around or drive around and beat on doors in the neighborhood that they live in. Money is not trickling down from the state to the grassroots communities where it's needed.
Oh, I'm going to tell you what we have found, and both my husband and I, we both started our journey as activists, as Republicans. You know, of course, I worked doing opposition research for the Republican Party, and Jim, he did work for the rifle people, you know, the NRA folks and stuff like that, and some of the offshoot groups of that originally before we both ended up seeing the light and switching parties. But the thing is this, is both of us would tell you the Republicans have the money right now, or the Democrats have it and they're holding on to it at the top. And we have done research on this, and in like the National Democratic Party this year, what we found was that there were guys at the top that were making, you know, millions of dollars doing opposition research, and then they were paying opposition researchers $300 a week or $250 a week. Some of them weren't even getting paid minimum wage. And how do you be a, can you be a party of supporting $15 an hour when you're not paying your own help anything?
And opposition researchers need money. They need funding. You know, that's one thing as a Democratic Party you have to have. They should be a part of the Democratic Party with its own sort of bank account for the opposition research, because it's tough and long, grueling work. And you might have to travel. You might have to stay overnight. You might have to wine and dine. And when I say that, I mean, you know, meet someone for lunch or something. But opposition research is not a softball game. It is a hardball game.
You're not kidding. And that's the place where Karl Rove beats people all the time, and the Republican Party consistently beats people. They cough up the money to do political research. You don't win without money for political research. And our state party does not have any opposition research at this time. And this is just so you know, when I came forward as the Siegelman whistleblower, Priscilla Duncan, who was my lawyer at the time, who had been on the Democratic Executive Committee, she asked me to meet with, I think it was Joe Turnham at that time. And when I went and met with him, Joe Turnham says, well, we'd like you to do the research on this, this, and this. And I'm like, well, you know, my fee is this an hour. And they're like, well, we'll pay you when you get it done for us. And I'm like, well, but, you know, I need a contract or something like that. Well, I never got one. And but as good fortune would have it, there are individuals in the Democratic Party and the national politics that hired me. And so I did get to do opposition research. And as a lot of people know, I've done all kinds of opposition research. I went to Russia and did opposition research, you know, on Oleg D. Repraska in 2008. And, of course, we got the pictures then that came out with him with John McCain and with Rick Davis, who was partners with Paul Manafort. But the problem with that is even in the national level with the Democrats, they only pay 6 or 7 months ahead of time for opposition research. And you can't follow these cats like Manafort all over the world and expect, you know, to be hired just at 6 months before the election to win an election. This time I actually did not help after Bernie got beat. I told Cliff, I said, we've got to out that the system is online, so I'm not going to help anyone till the election's over. And then, of course, Cliff Armbeck came up with the money for me to go and research Steve Bannon after he was in the White House. But because the Democrats came up with some money, they were like, oh, goodness, we got to come up with some money to figure out what we have done. But at this point, it's too late. You know, I mean, of course, I did the research because everybody knew I understood the Russian connections as well as anyone because I've done them back in 2008. But the problem is there's not a consistent team of researchers that are paid well. Just the guys at the top are paid well. And sure, they're able to handle the major stories. But there are people that need to be followed pretty much all the time as to what they're up to. And Paul Manafort was one of them because he was up to a lot of bad for Democrats. Yeah. And, you know, I have spent a lot of time over the years telling folks, you know, and most people don't realize that road leads to Alabama. Paul Manafort's partner, Davis, because it's Manafort and Davis, is the guy who is buddies with Jeff Sessions. So, and who got Jeff Sessions to do the Big Eads deal here in Alabama. So the fact of the matter is, and that was owned partially by the Russian government at the time that Jeff was trying to do the tanker deal in 2008, which we outed and helped win with Obama. However, you know, the fact is people won't consistently pay you year after year to do research. And we need a full-time research group in Alabama. And had we had that, Jeff Sessions would not be in that DOJ doing all this white nationalist bunch of crap he's doing now, because we would have gotten rid of him long ago. But Joe Reed and Nancy Worley sat on their butts and did nothing. And that's my honest belief.
Yeah, I mean, it was a total disgrace. Like I said, Joe Reed, by his silence concerning what happened to Siegelman, by him not fighting and using that as a rallying cry, he disgraced himself in the grassroots. Like I said, I can no longer look. How am I supposed to look and really give the due honor to his past civil rights work when he's doing so terrible right now? And when he's out of office, nobody's going to remember the good things he's done. They're only going to remember how bad he was. I mean, I've never seen somebody just take their whole legacy and just tear it apart piece by piece. And that's Joe Reed. His legacy to me, in my view, and many on the grassroots, is not going to be a good one. I don't care how he marched. It's not going to be a good legacy in the end.
Well, I admire that he marched.
Yeah, I admire all of them that marched, but does not entitle you to have a stranglehold in a permanent position regardless of your work putting out. And they haven't won any offices. We got a supermajority in Montgomery, and some Democratic heads, maybe not just Joe Reed, but some Democratic heads need to roll because of that supermajority.
Well, I agree. I'm kind of flabbergasted and have been, but having been a whistleblower that was a Republican, I finally just basically said, look, there's not really any organization in Montgomery I can work with, because the fact of the matter is they don't want any new people, and they don't want to pay you. And I'm going to be honest, it cost. This kind of work cost.
I want you to wrap this up. We got about 1 minute before the show cuts off. Anything you want to end this with? We talking with Dana Jill Simpson, a very brave lady.
I want to say one thing. When I came forward as a whistleblower, I thought that I could just switch sides and that everything would be wonderful. What I learned is that both sides has elements in it that's not good. And it's going to take the citizens of America